Hey guys, I'm your host Smita Gunturi and welcome to Journey Podcast, your weekly podcast on transformational journeys. Hope you guys enjoy.
Hello everybody, I have Rosella Majorin with me today. She is from Borneo, Malaysia. She is an advocate for diversity, inclusion and mental health and a founder for a community platform called True Complexion. She has given talks and workshop events for brands such as Uniqlo, American Express and Intel. Thank you for being here, Rosella. Welcome to the show. Please go ahead and tell us your story in your words. Please go ahead.
Ooh, where do I start? I am from Borneo, like you mentioned earlier. I'm not too sure if it's clear on the video, but or if people are listening in, you know, I have a birthmark on my face, which I was born with. And growing up, you know, it really wasn't easy for me. I was teased a lot. I was bullied a lot in school. Kids used to call me names like Strawberry or Two-Face, the supervillain from Batman. And it really impacted my body image issues, my mental health, you know, and I really became insecure about who I was. I think it was a really tough childhood going through that. And because of that, I think I've made a lot of mistakes and a lot of bad decisions, especially, you know, in my early 20s. I was struggling a lot with who I was. I didn't know what I wanted to do with life. And I actually, you know, I guess you can say I was running with the wrong crowd for a while because, yeah, I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. And it was really hard growing up in a small community, especially back, you know, in the 90s, where we didn't have the internet, right? We didn't have access to a lot of the conversations and the resources that we have today. And I didn't know anyone who looked like me. I didn't have anyone who, I guess, like a role model that I could look up to. And mental health, you know, especially in Malaysia and at those times, nobody was talking about it. You're just told to get over it, you know, sleep it off, watch some TV, have some cake, and yeah, just get over whatever you're feeling. And it really ate me up because I didn't have that outlet. And what I really, really actually wanted to do, you know, when I was younger was to be on stage, was to do music. And I was often told that I couldn't do it because of my birthmark, because nobody would want to see someone like me on stage. You know, you're too ugly to be on stage. And so I forgot that dream for a very, very long time. You know, I gave that dream up of singing and performing. And I think because I wasn't doing what I loved, I ended up doing really safe jobs, taking jobs that put me behind, I guess, a desk, where I had minimum interaction with people. So naturally I became a writer. So I was behind the computer the entire time, most of the time. And I think it wasn't until I had hit rock bottom when I was 27 that I realized, you know, what am I doing with my life? I'm so unhappy trying to please everyone and trying to fit into this little box that everyone has assumed that I should be in, and not really being who I want to be, not pursuing the things that I love because I'm too afraid of what other people would say. And I thought to myself, you know, if this is going to be what life is like, then really what's the point of living, you know, because life was already so difficult at that point. And I couldn't imagine what it would be like moving forward. So I guess I woke up one day and just thinking, you know what, I'm going to start performing. I'm going to do what I want to do, you know, and even though I was 27, 28 at that time, and technically that's too late for you to start pursuing music, right? Because kids start when they're 17, 18 at that age, or even younger. I thought, you know, I'm just going to do it for me, not for anybody else. So I started performing at little open mic nights, 30 people. And I remember the first time I was so nervous, you know, I was crying in the car and I almost like turned around and went back home. And I was so nervous, you know, I had my lyric sheet on my lap and singing. I wasn't even looking at the crowd. I was like looking at my lyrics book, looking down and just like, trying to make out the words because I was just so scared of what people would think, especially me being at that age and me looking the way that I was. And yeah, I did that and I told myself, you know, if this is what you're going to do, you're going to commit to it. So I continued doing that for a few more years. And because I think I got more comfortable being on stage, somehow something clicked on me, you know, because I was a really shy and timid girl when I was younger. And somehow when I started forcing myself, it was really forcing myself to go back on stage over and over again, despite my anxiousness, despite my fear, I realized that perhaps now that I found my voice, maybe I could use it for something a bit bigger, you know, something more than myself. So that's really how the idea of True Complexion came about. I started this community platform in 2015 with the intention of sharing stories of other people who are living with different medical conditions, illnesses, skin conditions. So we cover disabilities, we cover the entire spectrum. And my intention of doing that was because I didn't have that when I was younger. I didn't have a community. I didn't have role models, and I wanted to create a platform where other people who might be struggling on their own, you know, silently, had this platform that they could turn to, or had this platform that they could just, even if they don't reach out to the community, that they could actually just view and feel less alone about themselves, you know, feel less unworthy. So that's really how True Complexion started. And because we started doing a lot of community, and besides telling stories via, you know, writing, which I do, and I have like friends who help me out with the photography and videography part. So besides telling story, we do events. We've done fundraising events. And I've also, I guess, because diversity and inclusion has become a hotter topic these days. Like you mentioned earlier, you know, I've also, a lot of companies come to me to get me to speak to their staff about, or schools as well, you know, to speak to the students about diversity and inclusion and about mental health and body image, because I think a lot of people still struggle with it, especially during the pandemic, but no one's talking about it, or they don't know where to turn to. So I come in and share my experience, and hopefully, you know, that helps someone out there. Yeah.
That's incredible. First question that I wanted to, not questions actually. First, I'm really sorry for what you have gone through. Literally, I've seen a lot of, when you say like, yeah, it is happening in school, were you ever able to get any kind of support system from the school teachers or any of your friends as such, or from anybody, no matter what?
I think I didn't know how to get help or ask for help. Because, you know, I was always told that to just get over it. And especially in our culture, I'm not too sure from the culture that you come from. We're a culture where you don't air your dirty laundry, or you don't talk about difficult things, right? So we tend to sweep our feelings under the rug instead of actually talking about it. It's not even something that is common in a lot of families. So whenever you're not feeling well, or you're mentally well, right? Physically well, people understand that. If you're not healthy physically, because people can see it. Yeah. But when you're not well mentally, people just think you're making things up, that you're being dramatic, especially as a teenager, right? Oh, or a young child. You're just, yeah, making things up, or you're just acting out. So I think when you get told that often enough, you believe that it's not, you shouldn't speak up. So you start, you know, retracting and pulling yourself back and start closing up, because whenever you try to speak up, you're told that you're making a big deal out of it. So I think, yeah, I didn't know how to reach out to people anymore. So I just let everything bottle up inside and just fester. And I guess that's how one day, you know, in my 20s, it just exploded.
So you never really had any kind of support system. It was just like you keep thinking about it and you just wanted to cross the boundary line. Yeah. I know that it is like the piled up emotions for about like 25 years or so that you were bottling up, and one day it bursted out. Apart from that exact reason, is there any other forces from outside that you felt like, yes, I have to really step up? There is no other way that I can survive in this world. As you mentioned, like, yeah, you hit a rock bottom and you just don't want to be there anymore. Is there any other reason apart from where you're like, you're getting bullied or like, you're putting down all the time or like bottling up all your feelings? Is there any scenario that really, really hurt you and so memorable for you that you have to cross the boundary?
Yeah, I think there's really a lot. I think in my early 20s, I didn't know how to cope with all that emotional pain. So I did what a lot of, you know, people at that age do. I partied too much. I drank too much. And I remember very clearly, you know, some days it was really bad that I would come home and I would pass out like in front of my front door before I could get the key in. Or I would pass out in the shower, you know, while taking the shower. And my mom, she would actually have to pick me up and get me dressed and put me into bed. It was really that bad. And I think the pivotal moment was my 27th birthday. I actually passed out before it was even midnight. And the next morning I woke up in a strange hotel room in a panic because I didn't know where I was. But luckily I was there with my cousin and not someone I didn't know. And I remember being so sick that day, you know, I kept running back and forth to the bathroom. And it was so bad that my cousin, she had to take me to the clinic. And I was there for 3 hours getting an IV drip because I had alcohol poisoning. And when I was just feeling so sick, in a tiny small room, just waiting for my alcohol level to go down. And I think it was at that point that I realized that if I continue living like this, I would end up killing myself one way or another. You know, if I like it or not, I might probably end up killing myself. So are you going to do that? You know, I think I had that point where I was just asking myself, like, is this the life that I want moving forward? Or if not, I have to change, right? I have to do something to change. And I think a lot of people don't realize about mental health is it's a lot of hard work.
Yes.
Like, it's a commitment to get yourself out of that dark place. And, you know, but you can do it. It's just taking one baby step at a time. So I felt like I was really in a dark hole that I had to find all my strength to just claw my way out of there. And it took years for me to get to where I am today. But, you know, and it's still maintenance, right? Because it's so easy for you to slide back down again, especially if you have such a strong history of it. So it's really a lot of hard work to maintain every day. But yeah, like you said, that was probably like one of the pivotal moments in my life. And I think for me as well, if there's other tiny moments that have really impacted me negatively, I think it'll also be like relationships. I was always told that, oh, you're the kind of person that I could date in private, you know, when no one's watching. But for me to bring you out to meet my family, for me to bring you out and meet my friends, nah, that's not going to happen because it's just too embarrassing. You know, people are going to judge. So yeah, how as a young girl, especially, you know, when there's so much pressure from society already for you to look a certain way, to have all these experiences add on, how do you cope with it? You know, if you don't have that help, right? And the thing is, my story is not unique. I'm not the only one who is going through this or who went through this, right? There's so many other women out there who have the same story or similar stories, but no one has or no one maybe dares speak out about it because there's so much shame hidden behind it. And that's why I think for me, I made it a point that I'm going to be very open about my story and tell people about it, because if one person even hears my story and find a sense of relief or find a sense of, okay, if she could make it out from that really dark space, then maybe I have hope too. So that's really the thing that drives me and pushes me to do what I do today.
That was amazing. Have you ever had suicidal thoughts?
I started having suicidal thoughts like since I was 11.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember very clearly. There was one day, I don't even remember why, but I remember that I was crying nonstop in bed, and I took a pillow to cover my face to try to suffocate myself. And I was just crying nonstop. And you know how the less breath you have, the slower your crying becomes. And I remember that was at one point I was like, okay, if I don't let go, this is probably gonna be the end of it. And for some reason, I decided to let go. So I have struggled with suicidal thoughts ever since I was 11. And I think 11 was a hard year for me. That was also the same year where I started, you know, like your friends started dating and things like that happened at that age. You started getting more, I guess, putting yourself out there, making more friends, but I didn't really do that. And also when I was 11, you know, I started getting widening injections to try to get rid of this birthmark. And I think you would probably understand that because, you know, in your culture probably as well, there's so much emphasis on being fair. Yeah. So, but the pressure, you know, for an 11-year-old to do that, and when it didn't work, I think it made me feel worse about myself, like that I can't be fixed, that something is so wrong with me, that even after my parents have spent so much money on me, you know, trying widening injections, trying all these different supplements and whatever treatments and products, and nothing worked, right? Then instead of making me feel better about myself, it did the opposite effect. It made me feel like I'm really damaged goods. I really can't be fixed, you know? And for an 11-year-old, that's a lot.
I was called names a lot. In my entire family, I believe like I'm the darkest complexion. So it's not my own parents. Apart from them, I believe the entire family call me like Blackie. Even today, some of my friends are like, yeah, I just laugh at them when they call me. The minute I pick up the phone and they say like, what are you doing, Blackie? I'm like, okay, yes, that is what my color is. So what are you going to change there?
Yeah,
I'm not going
to. It must have hurt.
There is nothing I can do about it. So yeah. I used to be called that way. And I have even heard dialogues like, don't touch my kids. They'll become of your complexion. Like, yeah, don't come out with me. I just can't be seen with you. The same dialogues when you are telling those. I was just recollecting like, yeah, I have heard all these things. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I really don't know what kind of a satisfaction they would get out of it. But yeah, I have been there. I'm like the shortest girl. And for my height, they call like, yeah, I'm the fatty and the blackie. So I have all these combinations together, and to call all these names, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
On that note, I just want to ask you one question. Like, how do you think the bullying in schools are, in a way, like I'm not talking about the range of it, but is that a helping thing or not to an extent where it is going to be damaging for everybody? The reason I want to ask that question before I even ask the full question, I have heard from some kids saying that minimum bullying should be there for the other kids so that they understand how the society works or like how they have to behave. If they are not, it might not be complete section of bullying in their sense, but they call it that. But they say like, if you're not like, if you're not letting other people know where the line is or like how you have to behave, what needs to be done, they are going to be way too radical and they behave in whatever the way they want. So these line of bullying is necessary in schools is what I heard from actual kids.
Okay.
So what, for me, I'm like 100% no for it. Yeah. Whatever it is none of your business. Let them deal with it. If they are becoming a bad kid, it is their problem. Let them deal with it. Let their parents deal with it, teachers deal with it, whoever it is. It's not your problem. But what these kids say is like, it's not about the parents or anything. If you're not being a friend of them or like you're being around them, if you're not even teaching minimum basics to them, what kind of a friend are you? So these kids feel that as an obligation to have that minimum bullying going on, saying that it is necessary. But I don't really know how far that is. So as you said, like you are a speaker around the schools and you know what it is. So what do you think or what do you say about that?
I feel like it's so hard when other kids try to govern other kids because, you know, they're also coming from that limited experience that they have, right? So to me, hearing that, I feel like it might be a power control or an insecurity control thing. It sounds like it to me because, you know, bullying implies that it's done in a very abrasive way, in a very negative way, right? Minimum or not, words can cut through, right?
Yes.
Little words like you're ugly, blacky, fatty, those things really hurt. There are different ways to try to teach your friends or to educate your friends. And there are gentle ways that you can do that, right? Like providing support instead of, oh, I'm going to put you in your place. So you check your attitude. So I'm going to say something mean to you or do something bad to you to make sure you do that, right? So I think it's that actually makes the cycle worse. It gives more power to the bully and it weakens the power of the other party, right? But if you come together and saying, hey, we're going to do this, to help each other to grow together. And we're doing it in a kind, gentle manner, right? In a growth mindset form, from a loving place. That's a very different approach. And you won't call that bullying. You'll call that support. You'll call that learning. So I think maybe there's also a confusion of what the word means to them as well. And maybe they don't have that. I feel like, you know, as kids, we don't really know much about the world. What we know is what we are taught, what we see in our own environment, in our own families, you know, and we act the way that we act based on this, what we know about, you know, the world via the lens that we have in the community and the family that we're in, right? So do I blame the kids for having these kind of perceptions? Probably not, because that's probably what they're accustomed to, right? So I think the school system has to change. The parental units have to change. It's a collective effort from all aspects, right? Because if your school system is strong, but you go home into a broken family and there's like havoc there, it's still going to bleed in. Yes. And if it's the other way as well, you know, you have a wonderful support at home, but your education, yeah, the school is really doing a terrible job in managing things. Then it bleeds into personal life as well, right? And it's really tough because a lot of time it's also not having the resources. A lot of schools, especially in the rural areas, they don't have the resources of like more private schools have, like having a mental health counselor or facilitator come in, you know, having these extracurriculum programs that could help them, right? Not all schools are that prioritize it, or they don't have the funds to do that, even though they want to, right? So it's such a complicated issue because there's just so many layers, and the history is so deep and so long that even, you know, if you watch like, you know, your Hollywood movies about, say, going new freshies going into college, right, going to universities, and that whole hazing thing is normalized. Oh, it's normal for me to like put a bag on top of your head, bring you to, you know, it's like kidnapping and doing all these really, you know, beating each other and doing all these horrible things to each other. It's normalized in all these cultures. So it's like such a deep issue that needs to be unraveled one piece at a time. Yeah, so it's like, I don't know, I feel like it's just such a complicated thing. There's so much to do, but if we don't do anything about it, if we just let it be, then it's just gonna
expand.
Yeah.
But you mentioned you started forcing yourself to put yourself on the stage to sing. Saying it as one word, like, yes, I forced myself to put it there, is easier right now. But while doing it, or even the thought of it, what was that process like?
So when I first decided that, you know, I wanted to do this, that I'm going to, okay, this is the thing that, you know, I've wanted to do since I was a kid, and I'm going to take a chance on it. The first thing I did was actually sign up for a vocal coach to help me build that confidence. And I remember the first class I went to, my vocal coach just asked me, okay, just sing me something so I know how you sound like, what your range is, right? Then I know how we can work to help you get better. Even him saying that, I started crying because no sound would come out, because I was so used to not using my voice or speaking up for myself even, right? So shy, so timid that even him asking me to just like, okay, yeah, just sing something, just sing one line for me so I can help you. It was so hard, like I couldn't do it. But I guess I told myself, you know, if this is what you're gonna do, you're gonna have to put yourself out there. So I took that 1 year to be in a safe space to just work with it with one person until I built my confidence to a certain level. And then I said, okay, we're gonna do this in public. So I started out with a small group for like with like 30 people, and that was really tough. And but I told myself that night, okay, is this really what you want? You know, having that conversation with myself, and I said, yes, you know, this is really what I want to do. And I said, okay, if this is what you're going to do, you're going to commit to it, you're going to do it, you're going to show up no matter how difficult it's going to be. And that's what I did, you know. And I have anxiety issues ever since I was a teenager. So I would have massive panic attacks like 2-3 days before an event would start. I couldn't speak. I'd start crying for no reason. It was really bad. It was really horrible. And I think people, closest people around me, like my bandmates, they were the people who probably knew or saw me at my worst. And even before performances, I'll just be like, you know, walking back and forth. I wouldn't want to talk to anyone. I'll just be like in my own world. And sometimes it was really difficult for me to get on stage. But the one thing that really helped me was meditation, to help center myself and center my fears. So I would always, instead of, you know, my other friends, whenever they perform, before they perform, they would be like mingling with the crowd, you know, I would be at the back putting my meditation music on. Okay, get into a calm space, calm yourself down. And I would do that every single time before I got on stage to just make sure that I was in a better place. And sometimes it was tough, still going on and feeling really nervous and just pushing through, even though I knew that I wasn't doing my best. But you know, like anything that you do, the more you practice, the better you get. And the more used to it you get, right? So your fear becomes a little bit smaller. And till date, like the biggest stage I perform on is in front of like 3,000 people. And that might not be a lot to a lot of people, you know, it's nothing compared to like filling huge stadiums and stuff. But for me, that was a huge point in my life, you know, a huge success. Yeah.
From the confidence standpoint, for the people that you yourself said, like, yeah, I'm not the only one. A lot of people has these kind of things. So for the people like us, I can say it's just not even you. So what do you say to them if they are still in suffering mode, or like if they are still doesn't having those voices that they wanted to speak out? What do you say from today's perspective?
I would say to reach out for help, because when you're struggling on your own, sometimes it just seems too dark and you're too deep in the bottom of the pit that you don't even know, you don't see the light, right? It's all darkness around you. So I would say reach out for help and reach out for the right help, because sometimes you think it's people you trust, right? Like your family members, for example. But sometimes they are the people who bring you down even more, or sometimes they are the people who make you feel like help is not needed. Because sometimes it's also the generation that they come from and the mentality that they grew up with, right? That mental health support and care is not important. So it's really reaching out to the right people and making sure when you have that person as well in your life, because not all doctors are good, not all therapists are good. There's some really crappy ones out there, right? So it's really making sure that you find the right person who can help you pull, give you that support system so you can actually not only rely on them to pull you out, but you also learn how to do it yourself, you know, because that's probably the best thing that you can do. So look for a mentor, look for a psychologist, psychiatrist, therapist, whatever you can. And there are free resources out there. And the beautiful thing about today is that everything is just a click away. You know, we have the internet, we have information. And because of the pandemic, a lot of therapists are doing Zoom sessions as well. So it's so much easier than back in my day when we didn't have all of these resources. Yeah, so I think help is out there. You just have to be brave enough to ask for it. And you just have to make sure that you ask the right person. Yeah, and there are a lot, I think in every country, in most countries, there are free resources as well where you can get help for free. Yeah.
As you said, you beautifully put it, like finding the right people is the core for it. You can't just go and talk to everybody and anybody. Sometimes it even make you feel even worse.
Yeah, so true. And then you spiral back down, you know.
It will be like a loop that you can never come out.
Very true.
Yep. And about the true complexion, what is that about? Why do you want it to start that kind of a work? What do you actually do with that?
Okay, so True Complexion, we started out as a storytelling platform. So basically, myself and a friend of mine, either a photographer or a videographer, we go meet with different people and interview them and so that they could tell their stories. And we take like really beautiful photos of them in their homes or doing something that they love. Because a lot of times, you know, when you Google a specific condition, for example, like psoriasis, right? The pictures that come out are very medical.
Yes.
And it looks very scary. So a lot of people, you become fearful of that. So you see the condition first and the human being second.
Yes.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do is change it. So you see the human first and the condition second, because that's what a lot of people in the community, I guess, they struggle with, right? People see their disability first, they see their illnesses first, and then they get boxed up into this tiny thing of what they can do, what they should do, you know, what they're capable of and not capable of. And actually it limits them, because, you know, sometimes a lot of them are so talented, they're such wonderful people, but they don't get the opportunities that they need, the platforms that they need, not only to share their stories, but to also share their talents and to create a living for themselves. So True Complexion really started as a storytelling platform, which is online on Facebook and Instagram. And then we we started doing some fundraising events as well. So raising money for people's medical bill, not only for local Malaysians, but also for refugees who are struggling with different disabilities or illnesses. So we pair up with different NGOs to do that, or I work with different NGOs to do campaigns for them as well. So like breast cancer campaigns. So the project has evolved, you know, from just storytelling to doing workshops and events and fundraising. And now, you know, for myself as well, getting asked to speak at different events and doing workshops for other people. Yeah. And trying to, I guess also, you know, a lot of companies, inclusivity and diversity right now is a hot word in Malaysia. So every company wants to kind of jump on that bandwagon because it's trendy, right? But the thing is, sometimes when you're not in that circle, you don't know the right language to use. You don't know the right images to use, right? And it might come across negatively to the community. So I also work with different companies, different agencies who want to design like more inclusive campaigns, but they don't really know how to navigate it. So they come to me either to find talents to be in their campaigns or to help them navigate the language and the conversation and the stories so that it comes out, you know, appropriate and I guess like in a good light that doesn't offend anyone.
What is success in your words?
For me, success is really if I can help people not go through what I went through. And I think that's really why I'm so, you know, one of my biggest passions is working with young girls, not like teenage girls, because that was the point when I struggle the most. And for me, if I can help these girls come to a place where they're comfortable with who they are, they believe in who they are, and they don't have to go through all the pain that I went through and all that years of, you know, finding myself, experimenting, it working, not working, you know, just going back and forth, and, tumbling down, going back up and down, right? If I can help shorten their gap, so that they don't have to struggle for that long. So that what I've learned throughout, say, 10 years, they can learn in 1 year. And they can help, they have these tools to help them navigate life. Then for me, that's success. Yeah, I don't think it's not so much of the big pictures and doing bigger things. You can do big, grand things, but does it actually impact a person? Or is it just, yeah, this is like a huge thing, you know, for 2 hours we do a great event, but like when people go home, can they actually apply it? Is there longevity in it, you know, or do they slip back in? So I think for me, success is really making sure that people, especially these teens, they have that support so that they could go on and live a better life than I did. Yeah.
What would be the upcoming projects or the plans that you have? Like, where do you see yourself or the true complexion thing in next 5 years or 10 years? What is your bigger vision for it?
So for right now, I'm just focusing on working with a lot of different schools, doing programs with them, doing programs with different corporations. And that's really, like right now, that's my main focus. And hoping to build long-term programs with them instead of just, you know, it's a one-day thing and then it's over and there's no longevity. So if we can build in a program into systems, right? And we could not only get me to facilitate it, but to have other people come in to hire other people to facilitate it so it can just expand. Then I think that would be more helpful. If not, you know, everything falls on my head because right now it's technically a one-person operation. So I have to navigate everything on my own. And I get people and I get friends to help me out in different aspects like videography, photography, all these small things. But if we could train other people to do what I do so that, you know, it just doesn't fall on me, right? So we can actually expand our reach and create more impact, yeah, to more people. And if it could go beyond just Malaysia, I think that would be wonderful. Yeah.
Awesome. Definitely best wishes for that. It has to definitely keep growing. Is there anything that you have never shared on any platform that you can share with our audience? I know most of the guests say, not most of the, I think I have asked this question to one or two people at the max, but yeah. But usually when I ask, or like before even I ask, everybody say like, yeah, I'm an open book. I have everything out.
Yeah.
But definitely there are things that we might have not shared.
Yeah.
That will be there in us. So yeah, any of such kind, such memory.
I think for me, it's also, you know, sometimes when you're, like I guess, like I mentioned earlier, right? When we're talking about the whole bully thing, sometimes when you get bullied a lot, it can have two effects. That one, your level of confidence goes down and you become more timid, more insecure, and you withdraw. And another effect of it is that you also become more defensive, more angry, and you also spit back insults to other people because you're defending yourself, right? To you, you're defending yourself, so you're not doing anything bad. So I would always bounce back and forth between that. And sometimes, even if it's not saying it to the person's face, I would say it to myself, you know? So I think this is something that we don't talk about a lot as well, because we think, oh, sometimes you're a victim, you're a victim, you're a victim. But sometimes because you're a victim and you don't know how to handle things, so what do? You fire back, right? And you, like the saying goes, I guess, hurt people hurt other people as well.
Yeah.
So as much as other people have hurt me, you know, I know that as a defense mechanism that I have also hurt other people as well. And I know that, you know, it's not right. Yeah. But I guess all of us, we just do the best that we can with the information that we have at that specific time. So it's really about learning and relearning and growing and making yourself better. Yeah. So I'm definitely not perfect and not, not, you know, I guess clean of that as well. Yeah. So I was a very, very angry child as well.
You sing, are those original songs, or like do you sing from already existing ones, like albums?
Yeah, I write my own original songs. So if you see the evolution of my songwriting, it really has changed throughout the years. When I first started, it was really like a diary for me. So it was really dark, really negative, really angry, really hurt, a lot of pain in the lyrics, right? And now if you listen to my music now, it's more airy, it's more light, it's more happy. So my music has evolved as I have evolved as well.
So definitely there will be all the songs you definitely like. That's why you are making them. But there will be songs that are really touching to you, or like, yeah, that wakes you up so much, or it touches your soul a lot. Would you mind to sing one song? May not be the complete one, at least like a couple lines. I'm putting you on spot right now.
Okay, let me think. Because I haven't, yeah, like since the pandemic, I haven't actually performed. So I like don't even remember half of my lyrics anymore. Let me think, you know. So the song is called Genevieve. It's one of the earliest songs that I wrote. I guess so you can see how sad it was. So it says, Genevieve, count from one or three. In the darkest hour, like a fading flower. Try to hide behind that perfect porcelain smile. But your eyes tell a different story. They don't lie. It's like the second verse is, Genevieve, act like you don't care, but your heart comes undone, unravels everywhere. All the boys, they treat you like a golden trophy, basking in all of the glory, doesn't make you happy. if you see, it's like quite sad. Yeah.
It was beautiful. That was beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much for singing as soon as I requested that. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So is there any closing note that you wanted to tell to the audience?
Yeah, I think it would just be everything that we've mentioned earlier, you know. Know that you're not alone, whatever your story is, whatever your journey is. Know that you're not alone in it, that so many other people have gone through it before and they have managed to get out of that dark space, and you can too, you know. It's just about finding the right resources, finding the right people, and surrounding yourself with that good content, right? Because sometimes I think there's a flip side of it as well, right? There's toxic positivity as well, which makes you feel like, why am I always feeling so down? Why am I not happy? Like everyone's always striving to be happy, right? But for some people, it depends where you are in life, right? Happy might not be the goal for now. Just being okay, acceptance might be the goal for now. And that's okay, right? There's nothing wrong with it. And yeah, I think it's also important, especially if they're from the younger generation, I mean, you're always on social media, to just be mindful of the accounts that you follow as well. Because sometimes you're following all these influences and all these people who are doing really wonderful things. And sometimes it makes you feel worse about yourself because I don't have that. I don't look like that, you know. Then unfollow, block. Like my rule when it comes to social media is always, is this person adding value to my life? Am I learning something? Do I feel good when I follow this person, right? Do I improve myself? If it's no, you know, I remove that person or delete them, because if it's really affecting my mental health, bye. Yeah, so even if it's your friends, your family members, right, sometimes it's them that are also making you feel that way. So have no where you're, or no shame to like distance, create distance from people as well, even in real life, right? Because sometimes obligation is there, but you have to take care of yourself first. Yeah.
Okay, thank you for tuning in. And you can find me on all the socials at Smita Gunturi and the show notes for any resources mentioned. See you next week. Take care.